In a recent study looking at drug and alcohol cultures on college campuses across the country, certain UW campuses not only ranked high on the list of drug and alcohol-related arrests, they actually topped it. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:06 on Tuesday, February 11th. This hour, we'll look at what campuses are highlighted in the study and what it actually means. Plus, we'll examine how campuses across the UW college system are handling drug and alcohol culture. You can weigh in on the conversation this hour. Do you work or live on a UW campus? What issues do you see in relation to drugs and alcohol? And what do you suppose the solution is to these problems? Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Joining me this hour is Wendy Seegers, director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. Wendy, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
This nationwide drugs on campus study shows that five UW campuses crack the top 20 in terms of having the highest drug and alcohol-related arrest rates. The top three were UW-Oshkosh, Stout, and La Crosse. You've taken a look at this report, which came out last week, and I'm wondering what you would say is important to know in terms of what it measures and how the figures are counted.
Well, I can't speak very well to the actual numbers in the report. I don't have access to that, and I'm not a researcher. Mm-hmm. But speaking as someone who's worked in the alcohol and drug prevention field in higher education for the last 15 years, in my mind, the report actually is an indicator of what Wisconsin is doing well in terms of policy and enforcement on our campuses. I think UW schools in general recognize that drinking and drug abuse are a problem for some of our students, and they're working really hard to get the message out that this kind of behavior isn't in line with the academic mission for our campuses and the success we'd like to see among our students.
Mm-hmm. Are the arrests indicative of a big problem with alcohol, or is it just a successful implementation of law enforcement?
Well, I think the fact that we have the drinking culture that we do in Wisconsin, it's not surprising then that we also have alcohol issues happening on our campuses. I think our college students in our state are somewhat reflective of the community at large.
What factors are at play there in terms of the drinking culture? Why is it a well-known and popular hobby on campus?
Well, I look at the culture in our state and how, for a lot of people, alcohol is just part of the social scene. And I think that that's true for many college students, certainly not all of them. You also see it in, adults in our state in general. Most social occasions involve alcohol. And our students, a lot of them that drink, come to campus having already established their drinking habits and patterns. It isn't like students show up on college campuses in Wisconsin never having seen the little brown liquid and all of a sudden going, wow, I'm going to have some of that. Most students actually arrive on campus already having, drinking experiences. And from what we see in general, drinking habits of college students don't change a lot. For some they do, but for some they don't. Some students actually drink less when they get to college. So I think the drinking culture in our state is really reflected on our campuses as well.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare the drinking culture on Wisconsin campuses to others around the country? How do we compare?
That's interesting, and it depends on how you crunch the numbers and the data that you look at. Wisconsin typically ranks higher, especially in, again, I keep coming back to it, but it's so important that the drinking culture in Wisconsin in general ranks among some of the highest states in the United States. So it's not surprising to me then when you look at college student drinking that a lot of times Wisconsin schools are also listed toward the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, UW-Oshkosh, for one, the officials there disputed the finding, or at least pointed to it not as a ding on their record, but as a feather in their cap that their campus law enforcement has done much in the way of curbing college drinking by making these arrests or issuing citations. Is that an effective way of handling the issue of underage drinking on campus?
Well, I agreed with the report that, or the statement that was put out by Chancellor Wells at UW-Oshkosh. I think, you know, I don't work for UW-Oshkosh. I have colleagues there. I'm actually an alum of that campus, and I know they work really hard at policy enforcement. But that's only one part of a multi-pronged approach to address this issue. So while I think that the UW system schools in general work really hard around policy enforcement, I also see them doing a lot of other programmatic prevention and education types of initiatives to educate students and help them understand how alcohol and drug use can impact their academic success. Mm-hmm. Successful programs also need to have intervention and treatment available, offering alternative activities. You know, all of these prongs are parts of an effective overall campus program to address alcohol and drug abuse.
Can you provide an example of some of these programs that are available and how they work?
I can't speak specifically for the four-year UW campuses in our state. I work for the 13 two-year UW colleges and UW colleges online. I'm happy to speak to what we do, understanding that, you know, we are freshman-sophomore campuses that are primarily non-residential. We have a few residence halls around the state, but they're pretty small. The majority of our students are commuter students. So our issues are a little bit different in that we don't have campus housing for a significant number of our students.
Okay, well, yeah, go ahead.
So I think part of what we try to do is really focus on academic success. When our students come to us, the goal is to help give them the tools that they need to succeed in school. And one of the ways that we talk about, I'll just speak to alcohol right now, is that there's a growing body of research out there that talks about how students who drink in high-risk ways, and when I say high-risk, I'm talking about impairment, getting drunk. Students who drink in that way, especially students who do that on a regular basis, are more at risk for academic success. They tend to earn lower grades. As we learn more and more about brain development, we're finding that before the age of 25, the brain isn't fully developed yet. That stop mechanism that people have isn't fully developed in young people. That thing that says, wait a minute, I better think about this. This could be potentially risky, isn't fully developed yet. And so we want students to know that. I like students to know that if they've been on a wild party weekend, their brain isn't really ready to learn for a period of time after they've been drunk. And so you can create a situation where if a student is getting drunk a couple nights a week, those day or two after those heavy drinking experiences, their brain's really not in a good place to be learning, retaining information, applying it to other concepts. And so they set themselves up to have more struggle academically.
Mm. We're talking with Wendy Seegers. She's director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. We're talking about drug and alcohol culture on UW campuses and college campuses everywhere. You can call in with your questions. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, or you can find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about college campuses and their relationship to drug and alcohol use among students. And taking your calls as well at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Wendy Seegers, director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. Wendy, let's take a call first from Azza in Oshkosh. Hi, Azza. Am I saying your name right?
Hi. Yeah, Azza.
Thanks. What's your question or comment?
Oh, well, like I said, I'm a student at UW Oshkosh, and I guess my comment is to kind of go along with what Wendy said, to the degree that, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of the students saw the report that this, you know, this website put out, that this survey put out. The school, you know, saw it, and everyone's initial reaction was, you know, we're not too happy about that because, you know, that's not an accurate representation of what the, of the college campus that I go to. You know, it's a good campus and everything, you know. And I guess to go along with what you said, you know, to shed some on the bright side to a survey like this, you know, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's an indication that, you know, the law enforcement here, the campus police, the city police, you know, are doing their job, you know, mm-hmm. in comparison to like a bigger school, let's say Minnesota or Madison, you know. Here at Oshkosh, we might have an undergrad, you know, population of 15,000, as opposed to Madison, which is pushing upwards of 30, 35. So in terms of a radius and what, you know, how the police are able to, you know, strictly enforce, you know, catching people who are engaged in drug and, you know, excessive alcohol abuse, you know, it's easier here. You know, our campus, you know, we have a lot of regulations set in place in terms of the dorms. You know, after a certain time, you know, a lot of security measures are put in place. You know, we have, you know, hall, you know, CAs, you know, resident advocates on duty. You're checked in, you're scanned into a dorm. So in terms of being able to isolate a problem and being able to make sure that a campus security officer or campus PD is there in time, you know, mm-hmm. they're able to do that more effectively.
Thanks, Azza. What's your response, Wendy?
Well, I'm glad to hear him speak about the fact that, you know, students at the campus were concerned about the report because they're the ones that see what's going on a day-to-day basis. You know, the problematic behaviors are oftentimes the ones that get reported, unfortunately, and there's a lot of great things going on at UW Oshkosh.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another caller in Oshkosh. His name is Nick. Hi, Nick. Nick, are you there? Okay.
I guess I just heard the previous caller, and I do agree. There is many students in Oshkosh that we do need to give praise. I guess I have a comment on the other side, though. I think Oshkosh is kind of sticking out for a few different reasons. First of all, the MEG unit is located right here in Oshkosh in Winnebago County, and I think that has a lot to do with it because obviously it's their hometown. This is where they're grown. This is where they get a lot of their numbers from. But furthermore, the police in the city are going into the bars and cracking down on underage drinking, which is fine. That's great. But then that's also leading to more house parties for these underage students, which is becoming quite a large epidemic. And if you do go down and crack down on one, they're just going to go to another house. So I guess I don't really know where it's going to go from here.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that question, Nick. Wendy, in your work and your research, have you noticed this trend, and is it a real concern?
Well, I think there's some merit to the concern about that, but I do think that colleges and universities in general are very aware of that. And so while they're trying to, you know, keep underage drinkers out of bars and trying to keep, you know, illegal behavior off of campuses, they're also aware that they have to address the community surrounding the campus and are aware that alcohol and drug abuse happens in that area as well. So I think that when we're looking at good prevention and we're trying to address the problem, you know, college campuses don't exist in a bubble. Good campus prevention also involves working with communities and developing relationships and addressing problems around the campus and not just on the campus. One of the things that would be, in my mind, is a goal for our state is that we can continue to get better as a statewide group, institutions of higher education and community groups and K-12. We all need to work together to address this issue. Like I said, campuses don't exist in a bubble, and if we can attack and address and prevent high-risk drinking within the population of Wisconsin, it will show up on our college campuses, too.
Mm-hmm. Are some schools naturally going to have more drinking problems? Are there schools that people are going to with a greater intent to party, perhaps because of that school's reputation?
I don't know that that's true. I think mm-hmm. you hear people talk about that. I think there's drinking. Students who want to drink are going to drink regardless of what campus they go to. I think there's drinking to some extent on every college campus. I think I would also throw out the flip side of that is that there are also a lot of students on every college campus in Wisconsin that choose not to drink or drink very little. And I want to make sure that we don't forget about them in this conversation, because sometimes when you're talking about this issue, it starts to sound like all students are doing it, and really that's not true at all.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to John in Richland. Hi, John.
Hi. I agree with your guest 100%. Do you know La Crosse, the city of La Crosse and the UW La Crosse? Do you remember them drowning deaths that they had, like 8 young men drowned to death? Well, it happens to be, as a matter of fact, that I am the former chief inspector for the city of La Crosse. And over the counter, I was asked to look into the latest drowning death, Jared Dion. And I found out that there was 3 bars on 3rd Street within a block away from the Mississippi River. And they'd go over there after closing time, and they would drink and have an after-bar party. Well, then they would, pardon my expression, urinate and fall in. And they found the body in the morning, like 300 feet down the river. And it broke my heart, because I said, you know what? You got to put a guardrail up. But I'm glad to say that because I said that, the law enforcement came in there and they closed that park down, Riverside Park.
Mm-hmm. John, thanks for sharing that. And we've seen a number of tragedies out of La Crosse as a result of overconsumption of alcohol. And that speaks to the risk of alcohol that you were talking about before, Wendy. But as I hear you talk about trying to propose solutions to this problem, and it sounds like a multifaceted approach. As you mentioned, the partnerships that are needed to be fostered in the community. What are some ways in which that you've seen that done on some of these campuses across the state?
Well, there are certain communities in our state that have robust community groups that are really attacking this issue within their community. I don't want to speak to any specifically because I would probably say something inaccurate, and mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to do that. But I can speak to what the research has shown. In terms of addressing high-risk drinking in general, where we have seen the most improvement with college student high-risk drinking is when the campus community and the surrounding community are able to work together and really make cultural changes that are sweeping and that everyone buys into. That's when we see the most dramatic drop in high-risk drinking numbers. We are going to need to address high-risk drinking by adults in the state of Wisconsin if we want to adequately address high-risk drinking among college students.
Hmm.
We have to attack the problem, you know, globally, so to speak, and not just look at college student drinking as the problem. That's what this article is highlighting. It's easy to measure. We have a ton of data that we can gather from college students, so it's right there. But if you look at who is feeding our colleges, who are the people that are showing up on our campuses, they're the residents of our state. And when we look at young people in our state, who were they raised by? And I'm not saying we don't have great parents in the state of Wisconsin. I am one. But we have to all take a look at it. All of us have to do our part to, you know, recognize that we have a culture in our state, and even if we're not aware of it, sometimes we're contributing to this idea that college student drinking is kind of a rite of passage, it's normal, they'll outgrow it, and that kind of attitude can be counterproductive to being academically successful in college.
We're talking with Wendy Seegers, director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. And after the news, we'll talk a little bit more about some of what the research shows about these issues and some potential solutions. We're also welcoming your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Cynthia Schuster filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about drug and alcohol cultures on college campuses across the country and here at the UW in Wisconsin. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Looking at some solutions as well with Wendy Seegers. She's director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. We welcome you to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. You can also find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Wendy, before the news, you were talking about how sometimes some of the drinking culture that we see on the college campuses actually begins courtesy of adult society. Can you talk a little bit more about that issue and what is needed in order to address it from that angle?
Well, I think there are a lot of factors to contribute, but I would say take a look at what the kids in our communities see in the course of their everyday life, right? We have a lot of advertising that they see, community events and activities, family weddings, professional sporting venues in our state. It's almost like everywhere we take our kids, they see a culture that involves alcohol as a social lubricant. And so for a lot of young people in our state, they grow up just thinking that's how it is. And if you've always lived in Wisconsin in the Midwest, you may not realize that if you went to other parts of the United States, it doesn't necessarily always look like that. And so we have raised young people for the last several generations to think that alcohol is just part of the deal. And then you throw on top of that this idea that, you know, as teenagers, adolescents age, there's this idea that, you know, alcohol and other drugs can be a vehicle for them to spread their wings and, you know, test the waters and see what it's all about. And then you hear about college party life. And while I would argue for a lot of students, their college life doesn't really reflect what you see on MTV or hear about on YouTube, it's that phenomena persists. And so for a lot of students, you know, they get to college and they have these expectations that this is what college looks like. And wow, even if I haven't maybe bought into that before now, for some students, maybe they decide that now's the time.
Let me pose a question or a comment to you that we hear a lot when we do shows like this. Krista on Facebook says, put the drinking age back to adulthood, age 18. Let parents educate their children about the responsible use of the drug. It's not a college problem. It's a maturity problem. What's your response to that?
Well, I have several responses. The first one would be if we look at the research that I mentioned earlier that talks about brain development, actually lowering the drinking age would be more problematic from that standpoint. I think there's enough data now that exists that shows that when we raise the drinking age from 18 to 21, we significantly reduced alcohol-related fatalities on the road. And I don't think anybody would argue that that wasn't a good thing. So that we have a lot of indications that, you know, raising the drinking age to 21 was a good thing in regard to those particular issues. I personally wouldn't be in favor of lowering the drinking age. We might change how much policy violations or arrests that we have because, you know, we would have students that are 18, 19, or 20 years old now that wouldn't be breaking the law. But we would have a whole host of other issues that would, my argument would be that more young people would use and abuse, and that would create more problems. Hmm.
So some of these problems might start in a greater degree in high school?
Well, potentially. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to speak to what would happen for sure. I think that the past is a predictor of what we might see in the future. I just think it would be risky business to think about, you know, lowering the drinking age. To me, the risks would far outweigh the benefits.
Let's talk to Jerry in Milwaukee. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, how are you?
I'm fine. What's your question?
I have a comment, in fact, you know, regarding the study. I really think, in my opinion, to do an honest academic research study on this problem, you really have to focus rather on campus life. You have to focus on K-12 because this is a drinking culture here in Wisconsin. And, I mean, to expect otherwise on campus is totally, it's not honest. I mean, the fact is, if you do the K-12, if you interview the kids when they're 5 years old, you interview the parents. Since I've been here in Wisconsin, I have had arguments with people, young people, who don't relate beer, for instance, as being alcohol. They don't think it's alcohol. You know, I mean, it's a beverage, but they cannot connect the dots in terms of beer being alcohol. Mm-hmm. Every event that occurs here, social event that occurs in the state of Wisconsin, it has booze as a major calling card for attraction. Booze and big food, unhealthy food.
Thanks, Jerry. So Jerry's point there is that, you know, alcohol, beer, for example, is so present in our lives that we might be desensitized to the fact that it is an alcohol, it is a drug.
Exactly. I see that often. And when I teach, I talk a lot to students about the fact that alcohol is a psychoactive drug, and it affects the brain in many of the same ways as other drugs, and that you need to be aware of that. I think, you know, one of the things that has happened in our culture because we are so desensitized to alcohol is that public intoxication is just sort of run of the mill. We see intoxicated people, and a lot of times the response is a little snicker, or we just, you know, continue on with our business. And in other parts of the country where the culture is different, seeing someone intoxicated on the street is a cause for concern.
Annette on Facebook says, Stout treats their students like children, and alcohol recovery in Wisconsin is a joke. It's an illness, and teaching the truth would help. When you know better, we do better. Do campuses have AA meetings? Do you know that, Wendy?
A lot of our campuses have them, and if they're not on the campuses directly, they're in the local community nearby to our campuses. The AA community has worked with our campuses and our students for as long as I've been around.
Mm-hmm. What other options are available to someone who might be struggling not just with alcohol, but what about drugs?
Yeah, I think that all of the UW system schools have counseling services available on their campuses. So if a student is concerned about themselves or someone else, that they can tap into that resource. There are a lot of resources online, too, if someone is wondering, like, might I have a problem, or could someone I care about possibly have a problem either with alcohol or other drugs. I can give you the URL for the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program website. We call it the Smart and Healthy website. The URL is uwc.edu/AODE.
Okay.
And you can find a lot of information there if you're concerned or signs and symptoms, things to look for. There's also some national websites that are really good. The National Institute for Drug Abuse, NIDA, has great information on all sorts of different drugs and signs and symptoms, things to look for, what you might expect from someone who's abusing different substances. And the National Institute of Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse, NIAAA, also has a great wealth of resources regarding alcohol abuse and addiction.
And again, the URL for your site was uwc.edu/AODA, correct?
AODE.
DE. I had that written right. I said it wrong. We will put that link on Facebook for our listeners to use as a resource if they'd like as well. We're talking with Wendy Seegers. She's director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Enforcement Program, talking about drug and alcohol abuse on college campuses. If you have any questions or comments, the phone number is 1-800-642-1234. We would rather have you call the toll-free hotline. Sorry about that. 1-800-642-1234. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about drug and alcohol culture on college campuses in the state and taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. My guest is Wendy Seegers, director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. Wendy, how pervasive are drugs on campus, and what's the number one concern right now?
Well, drug abuse is not nearly as pervasive as alcohol abuse, but we do have drug abuse on campus. I would say our number one drug has been, for as long as I can remember, marijuana. And in recent years, prescription drug abuse has kind of been sneaking up there a little bit. But the majority of our students are not using drugs. But those that are, marijuana and prescription drugs are probably the most common.
Mm-hmm. Like prescription drugs like Adderall or what other ones?
Well, I would say, yes, we see some incidences of prescription stimulants like Adderall or Ritalin. There's also been, and this isn't just across college campuses, but across the country in general, a rise in the abuse of prescription pain medications, the prescription narcotics.
Earlier in the hour, you mentioned that it takes a multi-pronged approach to address some of these issues, and we talked about some of those avenues. What are some that we didn't get to yet that you think are important to discuss?
Well, I was talking before about, doing robust prevention with students. I think, doing more of that. I think Jerry, who called in, talked about K-12 prevention. I think our K-12 schools are doing some of that. And if you talk to folks that work in middle school and high schools, I'm sure they would tell you, yep, we're seeing these issues. We need to, do better. It's such a cultural thing here that it's really hard to address it just with students. We need to take a look at the greater community. I think also continuing to develop services for students and community members that might be struggling, so to have better intervention tools, to be able to identify some of the concerns for students sooner. I know one of the things that we do in the UW colleges, and I think a lot of our sister schools on the four-year campuses do them as well, are alcohol screenings, where we offer students an opportunity just casually will be on campus somewhere and we'll ask them a couple of questions, and then we score those responses and give them feedback based on the level of risk that their current drinking habits are indicative of, and kind of use that as an opportunity to educate them. You know, are you aware that there's some risk potential here, and this is why? Maybe, you know, because of their frequency of drinking, they're developing tolerance. And the more tolerance a person has, the more likely they are to increase their alcohol consumption because they want to continue to feel what they're used to feeling. And so you can have a conversation with students about that. If the alcohol screening indicates that maybe the amount of alcohol that they drink on a given occasion is high, then it allows you the opportunity to talk about what are the risks associated with that. And again, I often come back to how is that type of behavior going to impact their academic success. I think, you know, in the work world, you could also have a conversation with folks about how that will affect their professional performance on the job. And so being able to, for not only institutions of higher ed, but first-line folks like doctors and, you know, other people that interact with the public that have an awareness that maybe these substances are an issue for people, to be able to have a conversation and intervene sooner. I think education is a big part of that and can be really helpful.
What's their response when you speak to them? Does it really hit home for them, or do they think, "Nah, I'm going to buck the trend. I'm going to defy the statistics"?
Some of both. When I speak with college students specifically, I've had students that really had no idea that the level of their drinking could potentially be very problematic for them. You know, they grew up in an environment where this type of drinking was normal, and they didn't recognize that. And so being able to talk with them about, well, are there ways that you could maybe make some changes in your choices that would be more beneficial to your academic endeavors, you know, your pursuits, and have those kind of, but I also talk to students who, you know, I drink like this, and I'm going to drink like this, and I'm not real interested in changing. And for me, I just kind of plant the seed. If at some point you recognize that maybe things are getting a little bit out of hand, we have the resources available to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just be aware.
Dan in Menominee has a question. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. How you doing?
Fine. What's your question?
Well, I actually really enjoy your kind of soft approach towards changing culture. I think that's probably very effective, but it sounded like you had a little more hard-line approach because you were against lowering the drinking age when it comes to legal enforcement. So my question is, when it comes to campus law enforcement, would you favor a tightening of restrictions, a harder approach, or do you think that campus law enforcement should look at this more like a moral or ethical problem and less of a legal problem?
Well, I'm not a law enforcement official, and so I may not be the best person to ask, but in my opinion, good prevention and the way that the research has shown across the country to be most effective is that policy and enforcement is just one part of an overall approach. So I would say that campuses need to utilize enforcement as one part of the puzzle. But then you also have to have the other pieces in place to deal. If a campus only cracks down on enforcement and isn't doing anything else, probably not going to be as effective as it could be if they utilized other evidence-based approaches to addressing that problem.
Wendy, I'm wondering if over the course of your career you've observed any changes in the trends with regards to drug and alcohol use on campuses.
Well, in the recent years, we've certainly seen an increase in marijuana, which had been stable for quite a long time. And like I said before, we've seen an increase in prescription drug abuse. In the community in general, we're seeing an increase in heroin in the last few years, and that is, I think, directly related to the increase in the abuse of prescription pain medications. And so that's becoming a bigger concern for communities across the country. One of the interesting things that really drives trends is that when public perception related to the risk of a drug, when the public perceives that a drug is safe, use of that drug will go up. And when the public perceives that use of a drug is risky, use of that drug will go down. So if you look at a drug like methamphetamine that several years ago we were hearing a lot more about,
mm-hmm.
All of a sudden we were hearing a lot about meth and how risky it was and how dangerous it was, and there were pictures all over the place and in the news about meth mouth and the, you know, different physiological risks, the things that happened when people abused methamphetamine. And the public got the perception, wow, this drug is, you know, bad stuff. And use of that, coupled with the fact that we had some changes around, you know, certain chemicals used to make that drug were, you know, Schedule One and put behind the counter and different things like that. So obviously there was a multi-pronged approach to that issue as well. But in general, as people perceived that meth was risky, use went down. If you look at what's trending in the United States right now and in the last couple of years, there's been a big change with regard to legislation around marijuana. We have 18 or 19 states in the United States now that have legal medical marijuana. We have 2 states in the United States that have legalized recreational use of marijuana. It sends a message that marijuana is, you're not going to legalize a risky drug, right? I mean, there's a perception about that. I'm not saying that I believe that, but that perception exists. And as that perception grows, I think more and more people will use marijuana. And as more people use marijuana, we're going to have more problems with marijuana.
What problems do you predict?
Well, if you look at for most drugs, if you look at the dose or the concentration of the active ingredient, that can give you an indication of how potent a drug is and potentially how risky it is. The more potent a drug is, typically the more risky it is. So in the 60s and early 70s, most street-sold marijuana had THC rates less than 1% or THC concentrations less than 1%. Today, the average in street-sold marijuana across the United States is getting upwards of about 10%. So what I tell my students is it's the difference between having one beer and 10 beers in that same amount of marijuana. The concentration is much more potent now than it used to be, and the trend is, as we get better growing and hybridization and all those kinds of things, that the THC concentration in marijuana will continue to increase. Well, as it increases, the risks associated with marijuana continue to go up. It's interesting, though, that that's happening at the exact same time where we have a culture that's believing that marijuana is less and less risky.
Hmm. Well, we only have about 30 seconds left. Are you hopeful that the drug and alcohol abuse issues that you've seen on some of these campuses will get better, that these solutions will be put to work soon?
I think my colleagues and I will continue to work really hard to address the issues, use the best evidence-based strategies that are available to do the work that we do to help our students. It has been our goal, and it will continue to be our goal.
Wendy, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Wendy Seegers is director of the UW College's Alcohol and Other Drug Education Program. We posted a link to their website on our Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this hour, Christy Taylor for on-air direction, and Robin Cherry for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.